Good morning and happy Friday. I'm Cheryl Walker with the News Gazette. Today is March 28th, 2025, and we'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headline, He's Still Grinding, Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation Local Business Community Impact Award winner overcame loss, addiction, through devotion to his craft. This story was written by Jana Wieserman. That's jweiserman at newsgazette.com. Champaign. There are 2 days from his teen years that Britt Shaw remembers vividly. One is the day that his mother came to pick him up from Centennial High School and was sobbing. "What's wrong?" he asked. "I'm losing it," she said, adding that she'd been forgetting a lot of things. The same night, Shaw's parents went to a doctor and discovered the cause, Melania brain cancer. The second day that is etched in Shaw's memory came that summer. He was working at a construction job when his grandmother came to take him home, explaining that his mother had a seizure and his parents were headed to the hospital. On the way home, Shaw saw one of the worst accidents I've ever seen in my life. At first, his reaction to being the first one on the scene was excitement. His father was a fire chief, so he had been around the station quite a bit during his childhood and would soon become a volunteer firefighter himself. "I pull up and I see a semi-truck had destroyed a car," he recalls. "The car was completely destroyed on fire. I see my mom in the ditch, unconscious, and I see my dad still in the car, not moving. Eyes closed, covered in blood, and I thought, there's both of my parents dead right there." Enter Connie Brillhart, Shaw's high school counselor. When he walked into her office and asked to drop his Spanish class, Brillhart said she'd need to talk to his parents first. He replied that she couldn't, as they had been in a car accident and were both in the hospital, including his mother, who had cancer. "I've been told a lot of elaborate stories by kids before," Brillhart told the News Gazette, "and his was so sad, I guess that I wanted to check it out with other people." She soon found out Shaw was telling the truth. His father survived his injuries and is alive today, but his mother died when he was 15. It was the cancer that took her life, though doctors noted that the accident caused excessive bleeding to the brain and likely worsened her condition, Shaw said. "When I lost my mother in high school and I could have given up, Brillhart brought me in, treated me like a son, invested in me, helped me through a dark time," he said. "Checked on me every day and kept me going strong. From mother to mother, I knew the last thing she ever wanted to do was leave her son, especially when he wasn't even 18 yet," Brillhart said. "So I just felt like a mother to mother. I just connected with him and I just felt like I hope that if this were happening with my son, who was about his age, that somebody would be there for him. We connected and have never let go." Shaw, now 36, has come a long way since then. The class of 2007 alum, who is now the owner and president of Shellux Premier Renovations, recently received the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation's Local Business Community Impact Award. He and four other distinguished alumni will be honored at an April 11th reception at the Hyatt Hotel and Conference Center. "My path wasn't easy," Shaw told the News Gazette. "I went through a lot of darkness and tough times, but I learned that you have one life and you have to wake up every day and love what you do, because then it's not work." After losing his mother, Shaw said he was able to stay strong and finish high school. However, after moving out, he no longer had the same mentors keeping an eye on him. "I chose the wrong people, places, and things to find myself," he said. "And it led me down a dark road of party scene, substance abuse, all types of things." Then one New Year's Eve, about 10 years ago, Shaw's cousin asked him an important question. "He looked at me and said, are we done?" Shaw recalls. "And he drove me up to a rehab center in Minnesota, and I am currently over 9 years sober." In discussing his career, Shaw said that his uncle, Jerry Ramshaw of Ramshaw Real Estate, gave him hands-on experience in construction and trades during his teen years. After college, Shaw saw a need in the market for a high-end paint and remodel business. He initially opened Shaw's Premier Painting in 2013. The business later grew and evolved into Shaw Lux Premier Renovations. People want to hire a one-stop shop, he said. So now we have a paint division, a drywall division, a floor division, a tile division, a remodel division. Shaw estimated that he works about 80 to 100 hours each week. Brewhart noted that Shaw still has a lot of energy, which has served him well. He's still grinding, she said. He's never going to be laying on the beach while his team is working, probably unless he gives everybody the day off. For success, a loving heart and a good work ethic is all you need sometimes, Shaw said, crediting these lessons to his childhood spent on a farm. One of Shaw's recent projects serves as a demonstration of this philosophy. The total overhaul of this girls' basketball locker room at Central High School, Kathy MacArthur had reached out for an estimate for how much it would cost to remodel the facility after noting the disparity between the boys' and girls' locker rooms. He blew me away because he did not hesitate for one second to offer to cover the cost of the renovation as a service project for his company. She said, he brought his crew in and they knocked the project out in less than a day. They covered up what was previously a men's urinal, painted the walls, redid the lockers, and made the space more welcoming for the girls. Despite being a Charger rather than a Maroon, Shaw had a gut reaction to volunteer his team's services. It was in pretty rough shape, he said, and I knew that I could really impact a lot of young women in a very positive way to not only make them love the sport more, but just be happy each and every day to go into a place that they actually enjoy being at. The project also included designing a new layout, demoing and gutting the locker room, ordering new banners. The project also included designing. MacArthur, who nominated Shaw for the Local Business Community Impact Award, told the News Gazette that his company has given back to the community in countless ways, including other service projects and donations. She also praised Shaw as a model of positivity and resilience. Britt has impacted students in our community because he is a living testament that you can still succeed despite perceived failures. You don't have to travel perfect paths to success. MacArthur, as a matter of fact, he has demonstrated that more obstacles you have to overcome, the more grateful and humble you are when your blessings come to fruition. In addition to his work as head of Shalux, Shaw is also very active in his church and often speaks about his personal experience on local podcasts. He also serves on Rosencrantz National Addiction and Recovery Board. When asked what he's most proud of, Shaw said, "Where I am today, overcoming all of life's challenges and battles, I've done in a 360 and I've overturned it. And now to be able to give back and serve the community in the way that I do is amazing." He has always been thinking of other people. Remain humble, Brewhart said. He is now like Mr. Big Shot or anything. He is not like Mr. Big Shot or anything. Brewhart and Shaw's friendship came full circle recently when her husband passed away in December. Shaw reached out to see if she wanted to talk. There's just some people in your life that are for a season and a reason, and he's one of them, she said. Brett Shaw, owner of Shalux Premier Renovation, is shown where he spends a lot of his time at a work site. This picture was provided by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. National Wheelchair Basketball Association, back where it began. Championship tournaments return to sports birthplace at U of I. This story is written by Luke Taylor. That's iTaylor at newsgazette.com. Shiny wheels skim across hardwood at State Farm Center as 10 players move up and down the court or try to stop their opponents from moving by trapping them with a teammate. That's the thing about playing basketball in a wheelchair. A player can spin out of screen, but if a second opponent moves in behind him, it gets pretty difficult. The 17 teams meeting for the National Wheelchair Basketball Association men's and women's collegiate championships know that kind of strategy all too well. This year's the University of Illinois' turn to host, giving even many of the Illini team members for their first ever chance to play in the State Farm Center. "We always see the stadium, but I never had the privilege to play here," said Jacob Tyree, head coach of the Illini men's wheelchair basketball team. "It was really cool, even just in our warm-up to shoot around." Tyree is a former Illini player himself and was around when the U of I hosted the tournament in 2013, but it was held in the Huff Hall at the time. Over a decade later, he returned for his first year as a coach, staring down the challenge of settling with the team and preparing for the national championship all at once. The men's team won its first game Wednesday against Eastern Washington, but lost to Alabama on Thursday, leaving it too close out of season with a Thursday evening game. The women's bracket starts Friday with the Illini first playing at 10 a.m. against City University of New York. While the loss is hard, fought game was disappointing. Therese said he's just feeling proud of what the team has accomplished. The entire first semester was really just me undoing other things. Whether that's the form junior coaches, if they're coming in as freshmen, or the previous coach who has a very different coaching style than what I do, he said. With only one player set to graduate this semester and new recruits on the way, Tyree is looking forward to building on this foundation next season. He's also looking forward to having more time to focus on the team itself without all the tournament planning meetings. Tyree says the Illini Athletic Department was a huge help, looping in staff from Disability Resources and Educational Services on a list of students on campus with an interest in broadcasting or media who could help out with the commentary, running game clocks, and the rest. The wheelchair basketball players also had a hand in preparing for the tournament, from packing goodie bags to laminating badges. Among the commentators was Genesis Bryant of the Illini women's basketball team. "We don't have budgets for the athletic that other teams do, so a lot of this is volunteer," Therese said. "How cool is it that we get to see our able-bodied counterparts engage with our athletes because they respect the work they put in to be on this big stage?" Coaching for Tyree has been as much about connecting with his team and helping players connect with one another as it has been teaching basketball. He believes no one can be upset over a meal, so he brings the team together to eat and talk. Players also come by his office for advice on everything, from relationships to money to academics. The coaching role is, I would say, a 5 to 10% basketball, Tyree said. The other 90 to 95% is just being a dad to 13 college kids and everything that comes with that. He says he's grateful to advice and support from one person who should understand his position more than most. Illini Women's wheelchair basketball coach Stephanie Wheeler. Even though her team wasn't set to play until today, many players were at the men's game on Thursday cheering the men on. Wheeler herself was right at the sidelines, part of every timeout huddle and pep talk. She's been hard at work training several new players this year, but has good feelings going to the women's tournament. "There was a lot of unknown coming into the beginning of the season, and what I really love about this team is how much they've taken on and improved over the course of the year," Wheeler said. Veteran players have stepped up into to team captain roles to help bring up the newbies. By Wheeler, some culture comes first, then skill development. To her, that's what motivates the whole team to train hard, and the captains are the pushing that along by being supportive, but also by expecting their teammates to put in the work. Wheeler said she encourages everyone to come out to the tournament. Tickets are free, and the Illini have enjoyed welcoming teams in across the country. "We watch our men and women basketball teams play here all the time," she said. "I think it's a dream for our student athletes to be able to play here and be on the court that has orange and blue on it and Fighting Illini on the wall. You feel like you're home. The University of Illinois is home to the Illini, but it's birthplace to all collegiate wheelchair basketball." Legendary Tim Nugent founded the National Wheelchair Basketball Association and held its first tournament at the U of I in 1948. Collegiate wheelchair basketball started in Champaign, Illinois, and to be able to celebrate the sport on the scale where it started is a unique opportunity, Wheeler said. From left, Anika, Cassidy, Abigail, Counts and Mary and Marley Wagstaff, all current and former members of the Illini's wheelchair basketball team, cheer on the men during the latter games Thursday at National Wheelchair Basketball Association College Championship at the State Farm Center in Champaign. Luke Taylor photos, the News Gazette. Village of Rantoul, adding a dome, a complex proposal. Idea hinges on receiving sponsorship. The story is written by Dave Hinton, that's dhinton@newsgazette.com. Rantoul. Mayor Chuck Smith said he hopes to bring to the village board in May or June a proposal to consider construction of a dome at the Rantou Family Sports Center. Built in 2021, the complex features outdoor fields, among them soccer, basketball, softball, and football. Smith said the complex, funded by grants, sponsorships, and donation, has been a success. We book solid for the next 3 to 4 years, he said. He said the complex is holding its own with the goal for it to create economic impact for the village and the rest of Champaign County. Smith said he has talked extensively with the village administrator, Scott Eisenhower, operations director Ryan Reed, and recreation director Luke Humphrey about adding a dome to be able to host events during the colder months. They have concerns that we might not be able to do it, Smith said. They have concerns about the risk. Reed said the village is not actively pursuing an indoor space, but we're not saying that we don't want it either. We just know that the model we have now is working, he said. We saw 1.2 million visitors in 2023 and believe we have pretty much the same in 2024. Although those figures are not yet available right now, we have a 20-year bond to pay off. Eisenhower said, including a dome was part of the discussion for the complex from the outset. It was decided at the time that we wanted to focus solely on an outdoor complex and make sure that it was as successful before we looked any further down the road, he said. He said officials began looking at what opportunities would exist for building an indoor facility about a year ago. Initial designs have been created based on input from potential users on what would look like to see included. All that being said, I have also been very clear that any construction of an indoor space would have to be privately funded, Eisenhower said. The village has approached potential sponsors about funding an indoor facility only at the point of receiving sponsorship, Eisenhower said, would be the proposal to build the dome be brought to the village board. Yes, there is a desire and a need for an indoor facility, he said. Yes, we have initial designs for an indoor facility, but only upon securing a private funding source would we move forward with construction. Eisenhower said he believes there are entities that are interested in sponsorship, certainly with the exposure that the outdoor complex brings to the community of over 1 million visitors and 30,000 cars daily going past our exit. Those exposures are attractive to a national brand, he said. One good thing, we're in the middle of everything in Champaign County, he said. We're 2 to 2.5 hours away from 3 major cities, Chicago, St. Louis, and Indianapolis. There's the interstate, a regional airport, and Amtrak. I think a lot of youth recognize us as a major sports driver because of IHSA basketball at the Marathon and U of I Sports. Smith said, if built, a dome would be located on the south side of the complex, highly visible from Interstate 57. He said the village would have to extend Broad Meadow Road to the dome, but we'll have to do that anyway to accommodate hope for hotel growth. At present, Marriott is going to put some type of hotel here, and they will bring a nationally known restaurant with them, Smith said. Champaign man charged in shooting that left 2 dead. The story is written by Jay Wieserman. That's Jay Wieserman at newsgazette.com. A Champaign man has been charged in connection with a shooting that took place at a pop-up party last summer, leaving 2 dead and 2 more injured. The charges for 22-year-old Corey Butler included multiple counts of murder and 1 count of being a felon in possession of a firearm, police said. Butler was already in custody at the Champaign County Jail when he was charged Thursday. The charges stem from a shooting that resulted in the deaths of George Doris Rogers and Deanna Staple, both 18, and of Champaign. A 25-year-old woman and a 15-year-old boy were also injured in the incident, and damage was also reported to a vehicle. Officers were originally dispatched at 12:34 a.m. July 28, 2000 block of Cynthia Drive for a report of a shooting with injuries. They said their investigation indicated that people had been gathering in the parking lot of an apartment complex when multiple individuals, including Butler, opened fire. Police personnel from the Champaign Fire Department provided aid to those injured until they could be taken to an area hospital. Shortly after, one of the victims arrived at the hospital via personnel transport. Mr. Doris Rogers was shot in the chest, while Mrs. Staple had gunshot wounds to the leg and torso. both succumbed to their injuries after being taken to the hospital. Police are still seeking witnesses and video footage that can aid in the ongoing investigation. They ask that anyone with additional information contact them at 217-351-4545. History. Area history. In 1925, Champaign firefighter Gus Schalk left early this morning with the Champaign-American LaFranc fire pumper apparatus on a fast train from Murfreesboro and the scene of the tornado disaster, where the Champaign equipment will act as Murfreesboro's fire protection until the city's equipment can be repaired. Murfreesboro Fire Department and truck were destroyed when the wind struck the city last week. In 1975, Urbana Fire Chief C. Earl Moe Paris has announced he will retire at the end of May. He joined the fire department in 1947 during his 11th year as chief. The C's of the UFD nearly doubled, increasing from 23 firefighters to 43 since 1964. In 2010, nearly 80% of incoming calls to Champaign County emergency dispatchers are from cell phones. International history. Today's highlight: on March 28, 1979, America's worst commercial nuclear accident occurred with a partial meltdown inside the Unit 2 reactor at the Three Mile Island plant near Middletown, Pennsylvania. On this date in 1898, the U.S. Supreme Court in the United States versus Wong Kim Ark ruled that 6-2 that Wong, who was born in the United States to Chinese immigrants, was an American citizen. It was the first Supreme Court decision to rule on the citizenship status of a child born in the United States to non-citizen parents. In 1935, the notorious Nazi propaganda film, Triumph des Willens, Triumph of the Will, directed by Leni Riefenstahl, premiered in the Berlin with Adolf Hitler present. In 1941, Arthur Virginia Woolf, 59, drowned herself near her home in Lewes, East Sussex, England. In 1969, the 34th President of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower, died in Washington, D.C. at the age of 78. In 2022, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed the Florida Parental Rights and Education Act, commonly referred to as the Don't Say Gay Law, which includes the prohibition of classroom discussion about sexual orientation or gender identity in some grade levels in Florida schools. In 2024, the FTX cryptocurrency exchange founder Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years in prison after being convicted of fraud and the conspiracy charges related to the collapse of the exchange. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying Up on Fridays will spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing itaylornewsgazette.com. Freeman's Tavern has been operating in Royal for 75 years, and for the last 10, Meredith Ferrix has been behind the bar. "I've been in Freeman's since I was born," Ferrix said. "It's just been a part of the community and family, so when they needed part-time help, I was able to work around it and start for them." She took a common route to the bartending career, starting out as a waitress and moving over to mix up drinks when she was old enough. "In a small town like Royal, most of the bar's clientele are locals," Ferrix already knows, and that's her favorite part about the job. "Folks who have moved away always come back by the bar and grill when they have visit too. They went there, they heard their parents talk about stories from there, their grandparents talked about stories from there," Ferrix said. For the most part, she's serving up beer, but Ferrix says she always enjoys making a good margarita for herself. The go-to is Apple Crown Royal and cranberry juice. While the main Freeman's crowd and those locals, Ferrix encouraged everybody to come by because the family who owns it takes pride in business. A picture was provided. "The very best times there, in her opinion, are Christmas Eve. Freeman's has a long-standing tradition of having snacks and Tom and Jerry's, the bar's specialty drink. Available on Christmas Eve, the bar closes at 5 p.m. for the holiday, but just about everybody in town will swing by for a few minutes. Being from a smaller community, our friends are like our family," Ferrix said, "so everybody does want to see them and tell them happy holidays before everybody goes off to their immediate families. Outside the bar, you can find Ferrix working at Champaign Eye Professionals, hanging out with her kid, or taking an opportunity to be outside walking." Nation and world. Department of Health and Human Services another 10,000 job cuts in the works. Restructuring will consolidate many divisions by Leela D. Groot and Sanja Raman. Washington, the Health and Humane Services Department is planning a dramatic staffing cuts to the agency with the state goal of saving taxpayer dollars and streamlining operations, Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced Thursday morning. The department outlined plans to cut 10,000 jobs, in addition to about 10,000 employees who left voluntarily earlier this year. In total, the effort will result in downsizing the department from 82,000 full-time employees to about 62,000, about a 24% reduction. The cuts would include a reduction of 3,500 full-time employees from the Food and Drug Administration, 2,400 employees from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, 1,200 from the National Institute of Mental Health, and 300 from the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services, according to an HHS fact sheet. Over time, bureaucracies like HHS become wasteful and inefficient, even when most of their staff are dedicated and competent civil servants, Kennedy said in a statement. In a letter to the FDA's union obtained by CQ Roll, all of the FDA's Human Resources Office said specific notices to employees could be sent out as early as today. HHS said it does not plan any further reductions other than those announced, but will look for additional ways to streamline its functions. The reductions are an effort to align the department with the President Donald Trump's executive order in February to implement the Department of Government Efficiency Workforce Optimization Initiative. In a separate video shared to X, Kennedy said the changes would eliminate an entire alphabet soup of departments. The restructuring would consolidate the department's 28 divisions into 15. It would also create the new Administration for a Healthy America, which would combine parts of the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Health, the Health Resources and Service Administration, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the Agency of Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. I am Cheryl Walker, and this has been the News Gazette. Today is Friday, March 25th, 2028. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the newspaper, the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.